likes this one. My mum likes this one. My mum likes this one. But don't let that put you off.
Making space for women's voices, the voice of her say. The voice of her say. The voice of her say, coming at ya every Wednesday from 6 to 7.
Island to Palestine. Occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine. You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
Welcome everyone, you are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity radio show on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. This is a special one-hour programming to highlight the dire situation of the quickly collapsing healthcare system in Gaza and the challenges doctors in Gaza face, forced to choose between their own lives and their patients' life. All of this is the result of the ongoing massive invasion and criminal assault on Gaza committed by the Israeli colonial and apartheid government. Stay tuned.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. On Thursday, the World Health Organization warned the health system in Gaza is at a breaking point. The WHO said, quote, without the immediate entry of humanitarian aid into Gaza, especially health services, medical supplies, food, clean water, fuel and non-food items, humanitarian and health partners will be unable to respond to urgent needs of people who desperately need it. Each lost hour puts more lives at risk, they said. We're joined now by Dr. Zahar Salou, president and CEO of Med Global, an international medical nonprofit that provides health care in disaster regions. He's joining us from Chicago. Dr. Salou, can you talk about the situation on the ground, what's possible, what is happening right now to the people of Gaza, especially with this demand that half of the population move from north to south? This is including the populations of the hospitals.
The situation is beyond catastrophic. I don't have words to describe what's happening right now. I've been in Ukraine. Actually, I just came from Ukraine 2 weeks ago and visited some of the areas that were hit by the Russians. I've been in Syria. I've been in Lebanon, other places. I've been in Gaza 4 times. But this is the worst I have seen in Gaza. Children are dying unnecessarily because of this bombing. What happened in Israel a week ago should not justify what's happening to the Palestinian children and the women and the elderly right now, and what will happen to the futures. Hospitals are overwhelmed. We have only 2,500 beds in Gaza, and right now we have 7,000 critically ill, injured patients in Gaza. I've seen videos yesterday that was forwarded by Dr. Hussam, who works in one of the hospitals in Gaza, where patients are on the floor of the emergency room because there's not enough beds. Every exam bed has 3 children crying, and many of them are not crying because they are in shock. Doctors and nurses are in shock, not because of the overwhelming patients that are coming to the hospital, but because also they're not sure whether their families are safe or not, or whether they will live for one more day or not. There is 75 attacks, according to the World Health Organization, in the last 6 days on hospitals, on ambulances, that led to 15 medics who were killed and 30-plus who were injured. The situation going to get worse. That means more innocent people will die unnecessarily. Our hearts and prayers are with the people of Gaza, with the Palestinian people of Gaza, who are not responsible for what happened in Israel. Every loss of life should be treated the same way. And I don't think as a physician, I've been in crisis areas and disasters for the past 12 years. This is the worst I've seen. And I'm really fearful for the Palestinian people and the children that have no connection to what happened in Israel. They're not responsible for what happened in Israel. The situation is beyond catastrophe. And I urge our government, because they are the only party that is able to stop this hell that is raining on Gaza.
President Zaha Saloul, I want to thank you for being with us. President and CEO of Med Global, speaking to us from Chicago. As Israel intensifies its ground invasion and aerial bombardment of Gaza, concerns growing Israel may soon bomb the Al-Quds Hospital, the second largest hospital in Gaza City. Israel's ordered the hospital to be evacuated, but doctors say they have no way to move critically ill patients. The World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said, quote, "We reiterate, it's impossible to evacuate hospitals full of patients without endangering their lives." This is Nabal Farsakh of the Palestinian Red Crescent.
Have the means to evacuate Al-Quds Hospital. We have over 400 patients who are inside the hospital. Many of them are in the intensive care unit. Evacuating them means killing them. That's why we refuse the evacuation order. We call on the international community to intervene immediately to stop a humanitarian catastrophe that is unfolding.
On Sunday night, Democracy Now! Reached Dr. Fadl Naeem, head of orthopedic surgery at Al Ahli Al Arabi Hospital in Gaza.
The Israelis warned all hospitals in Gaza, about 24 hospitals, to evacuate all patients and all displaced people in the hospitals, because the people look for safety and search for safety in the hospitals because they think it's a safe place. We have here in Baptist Hospital about 3,000 people. They have about 12,000 people in Al-Quds Hospital, and they have also 400 patients. And today, they didn't bomb directly to the hospital, but they bombed all around the hospital. So all the glasses, the doors were distorted, and it's not functioning now. It can't be functioning because, you know, all the infrastructure is distracted.
That's Dr. Fadl Naeem, who works at Al Ahli Hospital. We're joined now by Dr. Mads Gilbert, Norwegian physician specializing in anesthesiology and emergency medicine. Dr. Gilbert's been working with the Palestinians since 1981, has been in Gaza there during the Israeli assaults in 2006, 2009, 2012, 2014, delivering life-saving trauma care emergency medicine, mainly in the largest hospital in Al-Shifa, but also in Al-Quds. Dr. Gilbert is currently with an emergency medical team supported by the Norwegian government in Cairo, Egypt, where they've waited for over 2 weeks to enter Gaza. Dr. Gilbert's also the author of several books on Gaza, including Eyes in Gaza and Night in Gaza. Dr. Mads Gilbert, welcome back to Democracy Now! Let's talk about this Israeli order that the that Al-Quds Hospital must be evacuated immediately, and the World Health Organization saying, you are asking our doctors and staff to choose their own lives over their patients' lives who can't be moved. Can you respond to this?
Yes, I can, Amy. And I think, first of all, it is completely absurd that we, in 2023, should have a state army that is threatening to bomb hospital and de facto is bombing hospitals and killing children by the thousands in what is called a war. Now, these threats to the Palestinian civilian hospitals in Gaza is extremely serious, not only because it is illegal according to international law, but it's threatening the lives of thousands of patients, of staff, and not to forget the 12,000 refugees who have taken refuge in Al-Quds Hospital and the more than 50,000 who have taken refuge in the Shifa Hospital. So these hospitals are not only clinical entities doing some treatment. These are cornerstones of the social fabric that remains in Gaza, because most of all other fabric is bombed away. I've talked to my colleagues both in Shifa and in Al-Quds this morning. And my colleagues in Al-Quds, a hospital I know very well, they report continuous bombing very close to the hospital, and they can see fires. Also, during the night, there has been heavy bombardment of the Turkish hospital, which is a little bit further south, and which is the central cancer hospital of Gaza. For Shifa Hospital, there is also threats. And don't forget that before they bombed the El Ahli Arab Hospital, there were threats and what we call knock-on-the-roof bombardment around the hospital. So there is an urgent fear among my colleagues, doctors, nurses, paramedics, in these two large hospitals, that indeed the Israeli governmental army will execute the threats of bombing the hospitals. But they stay put. And in that capacity, as health workers, to me, they are moral compasses and lighthouses of hope today in a very, very dark area of our history.
You have worked in Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza. The Israeli military says that that's where the Hamas command and control is. Can you respond?
I will ask President Netanyahu to put on the table the proofs and the evidence that there is a control and command center for the Palestinian resistance in Shifa Hospital. We have heard these claims since 2009. We have twice been threatened to leave Shifa Hospital in 2009 and 2014 because the Israelis were going to bomb it because it was a command center. Now, I have been working in Shifa for 16 years on and off, in very hectic periods. I've been able to walk freely around. I take lots of pictures. I video film. I've been sleeping in the hospital during bombardment. I've been all over. I've never been restricted, controlled. Nobody has ever controlled my picture and documentation material. So, well, if there is a command center, show us. You have pictures and X-ray films of all Gaza, all the tunnels, everything. So why is it that these 16 years of threats that Shifa is a command center has not been given any evidence at all that it de facto is? Now, if it was a military command center, I would not work there because I obey to the Geneva Convention, number one. Number two, if the Israelis claim that this is a mixed military-civilian target, because obviously it is civilian, with tens of thousands of people gathering there and 2,000 patients being treated. If it is a mixed military-civilian target, the civilian precautions take priority over the military. So in accordance with the Geneva Convention, you can't bomb hospitals unless they have very clear military functions. So to me, this is all part of this immense intimidation of the Palestinian people in Gaza. They are threatened with leaflets from the planes and the helicopters. They are threatened by phone calls. They are threatened by, you know, if you stay in northern Gaza now, we define you as a terrorist. What is this? 2023, 2.5 million, 2.2 million people, civilian, unarmed people being killed. A child killed every 10 minutes. So far today, the number of killed Palestinian children is 3,324, and there are missing 2,062 Palestinian children in Gaza. That's 5,300 Palestinian children killed in 3 weeks. And I asked President Biden, what kind of president are you? And the vice president, do you have children? Do you accept that this is a war? Do you accept that your supported Israeli army is killing by the thousands children? For heaven's sake, let's have a ceasefire. Let's lift the siege of Gaza. Let's let in supplies and international teams to work. My colleagues are overburdened. They have worked night and day for 3 weeks now. This has to stop. I don't need to use the word genocide. It's enough to say mass murder of civilians. It has to stop.
You were just in Gaza a few months ago. Talk about what you did there then and why now, with this total siege of Gaza.
Thank you, Amy, and thank you for having me. Why go to Gaza now? Well, it's very simple. You need to choose in historical situations and in situations of injustice. You cannot stay indifferent. I have chosen to be on the side of the Palestinian people and their right to resist occupation, colonization, and apartheid. And part of that choice of side is that I ask myself, how can I, as a doctor, support the Palestinian people in Gaza? And I've been doing over the last 30 years several things. We have traveled every time there has been bombardment. We have been traveling to support the medical staff or colleagues in the emergency hospitals. And mind you, not because they cannot do the job themselves, because they are unfortunately world experts in mass casualties and these immense patient loads on the hospitals. No, but because in situations where you are really up against the wall, there is a word that is called solidarity, which is important, that somebody sides up with you, supports you, see you, and come to your assistance. So I call this medical solidarity work. And the most important part of that is, of course, to take the stand and be on the side of the oppressed. That may be very big words, but those are the choices. I'd like to underline that with relation to each individual patient I treat, of course, I'm completely neutral. If it was an Israeli soldier, a Palestinian child, a pregnant woman, whoever, I would do my doctor's job according to the ethical principles. But I choose to go to Gaza and not to Israel because I choose their side. What have we been doing? We've been doing this emergency work. I teach at the Al-Azhar University, which is the second largest university in Gaza. They have two large universities. It's the Al-Azhar and the Islamic University. By the way, the new building of Al-Azhar University was bombed last night, so I teach medical students. I've done that for many years. Together with the students, we're running lay people training projects. We're training lay people in Gaza, life-saving first aid, how to open the airway, stop the bleeding, find a good position, keep the victim warm, much needed, as you can see now. We have done extensive research, medical research, published in peer-reviewed journals like The Lancet, British Medical Journal. And I have always followed up the patients that I have participated in the treatment of, like the children that I was team working on with in 2009. So now I have a whole family, a whole set of families with kids who have now grown up and became mothers and fathers themselves. And their history and their development and their conditions in Gaza has been my most important source of information as to what it means to be a Palestinian family in Gaza. So many different activities going back two, three times a year, also working for the very good American NGO, Palestine Children Relief Fund, PCRF, who does a tremendously good work in Gaza. So it's been a very varied menu of activities, but always civilian.
So, Dr. Gilbert, you say you have the full support of the Norwegian government. You have a team there trying to get into Gaza. Who's stopping you? You're right now in Cairo.
We have the support, financial support, and the practical support of the Norwegian Minister of Foreign Affairs and the government. That's right. It's complicated. It's almost impossible to get to Rafah because you have to trespass a number. You have to pass, a number of obstacles. You have to have permission from the Egyptian Minister of Internal Affairs, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and you have to have permission from the Egyptian military security. We have the two first. The third we have not got. So you cannot get to Rafah because it's a car travel, 6-7 hours from Cairo through the Sinai Desert, then up to Rafah where the border station is. It's not a border because there are no international borders around neither Gaza nor occupied Palestine. But you get to Rafah and then you have to have your paperwork done. But also to go through Sinai, you cannot do that. You can't just hire a taxi in Cairo and say, I'm going to Rafah. You will have to pass a number of checkpoints, military checkpoints. Mm. So we have not been allowed.
So the Israeli president, Isaac Herzog, claimed no one is innocent in the Gaza Strip, including civilians. This is what he said.
We are working, operating militarily according to rules of international law, period, unequivocally. It's an entire nation out there that is responsible. It's not true. This rhetoric about civilians not aware, not involved, it's absolutely not true. They could have risen up, they could have fought against that evil regime which took over Gaza in a coup d'etat. But we're at war. We are at war. We're at war we are defending our homes. We're protecting our homes. That's the truth. And then when a nation protects its home, it fights. And we will fight until we'll break their backbone.
We will fight until we break their backbone, President Herzog said. Dr. Gilbert, the weekend has just passed. Israel cut off all electricity and cell service. What does this mean for hospitals? A U.S. military analyst said Israel's engaging in info ops, information operations, and that they wouldn't want the outer public to see dead children or to hear an interview with a medical doctor talking about the plight of the hospitals right now. If you can talk about what that complete shutoff, though they're gradually putting it back on, means for hospitals.
I'd just like to make one comment to the Israeli president. They're not at war with the civilian people of Gaza. They are at war with international conventions and the Geneva Convention, because you're not allowed to bomb and kill a civilian population which is unarmed. It's simply forbidden. And thank you, because we try to make a decent world. So that's my comment to that. To the siege of Gaza, it has been on for 16 years. It started in 2007, and it's been a crippling siege. We have studied it. We have reported on it. The UN has reported on it. It's made Gaza into a ghetto. I never used the prison term on Gaza, because in prison there are people who are actually have done something wrong, criminal, and they are sentenced to be in prison. Palestinian people in Gaza, the civilians, the kids, the mothers, haven't done anything else that and been born Palestinians in Gaza. So this siege for 16, 17 years has already forced the Palestinian society, the healthcare, the education, the businesses, the whatever, down on its deep knees. Then, when this started, and it didn't start with the shutoff of the mobile network, it started immediately when, on the Sunday after this Saturday, when the Israelis said, we will completely shut off Gaza. They turned off the light, they turned off the water, they turned off any entrance. And by that, they actually rendered 2.2 million people completely without the necessities of life. So this siege, this increased siege, has been going on for 3 weeks. And the results, just let me tell you what my colleagues told me yesterday in Shifa Hospital. They don't have water to drink. They have maybe 300 cc of water to drink. They have to wash in saline, dirty water, because all the desalination plants in Gaza are shut down. They have a massive problem with wound infections, because they cannot clean their instruments and have cleanliness around the patients. In Shifa now, they have 100 burn patients with more than 40% burned body surface area, most of them children. Infections in these burns are fatal. You get septicemia. So just to cut off the water to 2.2 million people who cannot produce the water themselves, it's a war crime. Secondly, this shutoff of electricity without allowing the fuel to come in to run the generators in the hospitals and in everything else in Gaza makes the hospital completely inoperable. And so far, 12 hospitals and 32 primary healthcare clinics have been shut down, partially because of lack of electricity and partially because of damage from bombardment. So this blockage of electricity, water, food, and medical supplies is actually enabling, it's crippling the whole civilian fabric. It's an avalanche of human suffering. It's an avalanche of human suffering in Gaza now, in addition to the death and the wounding of the civilians. Because people are flying, They are scared. They don't have anywhere to stay. So they seek refuge in the hospitals and in the UNRWA schools, which are also being bombed. They are in very much need of being in touch with each other and with their relatives abroad, because in crisis, what you need the most of all is your family. And for the hospitals, it's on the brink of total collapse now. I saw a movie yesterday filmed inside Shifa Hospital, where there is currently 50,000 refugees. And it's so packed you can't even pass a bed, because all these civilians fear bombing and they fear getting killed. So they seek to where there is some sort of structure left. And these two big hospitals in northern Gaza, Shifa and Mustashfa al-Quds, they are cornerstones now of whatever is left of social fabric and safety in Gaza, in northern Gaza. So when the Israeli occupation forces are threatening to bomb them as well, I don't know what the next will be.
And this debate over whether you can trust the Gaza Health Ministry's figures on number of deaths, now over 8,000, more than 3,000 children killed. President Biden repeated that, yet you had human rights groups like Human Rights Watch and others saying the State Department has relied on these figures and have said that they're legitimate. The human rights groups have, and the United Nations has. Your response, they're saying because the health ministry is run by Hamas, it's the government of Gaza, you can't trust those numbers.
Who can you trust in this world, Amy? I wonder what's wrong with Joe Biden. Where did he get documentation to say that you can't trust these numbers? I think the Palestinian people currently in this world is the only people who have to prove that they have been killed. Look, we have been doing research in Gaza for more than 20 years. We have published numbers in scientific peer-reviewed journals, The Lancet, British Medical Journal, based on these numbers. Because we are scientists, we are obliged to tell the truth. Now, what did we do when we were collecting these numbers? Well, we went through the Palestinian mechanism on how they gathered their numbers of injured and killed. We were in the office where this is done 24 hours per day. We saw how they did it, how they called their information officers in the other hospitals, not aligned to any political party, but, you know, clerks in hospital. We saw how they documented name, date of birth, father's name, date of death. If they were insecure, it was marked. These lists are comprehensive, they are checked, they are cross-checked, and they're published. And it's the base for all the UN publishing. The UN OCHA, WHO, and also your State Department. So where is, you know, this is part of the fog of war, of the disinformation campaign. Principles that each and every life is sacred. Armies may fight, soldiers may fight, man to man, kill each other, like in Ukraine. We may have different positions on that. But for heaven's sake, these numbers are right. They are the graphic illustration of the consequences and the fallout of the Israeli military complete bombardment of Gaza. And more than that, they reflect also this avalanche of human suffering that comes from the lack of water, food, and shelter and security. So we are going to see in the coming days hundreds of wounded who will die unnecessarily because they could have survived in a healthcare that was allowed to function at a certain level, even during this bombing. And, you know, everybody's talking about the conflict. I'm a doctor. I've been trained not to treat symptoms, but to treat the root cause of pain, of bleeding, of a lump here or there, not only to look for the symptoms. This is not a difficult conflict. This is a difficult occupation. And you have to solve the illegal occupation of Palestine and the settler colonial expansion into the occupied land of Palestine before we can see any end to this misery.
And Dr.
And what I'm hearing, what I'm hearing from Gaza now, my last word, what I'm hearing from my colleagues around the clock in Gaza and from my families and friends, the situation in Gaza now is so bad that Gaza 2023, it's going to make Dante's Inferno look like a tea party.
Dr. Gilbert, you spoke about the water and the problem of having clean water. Can you talk about the threat of the outbreak of diseases because people do not have clean water?
Yeah. Thank you for that question. I got a report yesterday from a colleague in Shifa who said that almost all the staff have fever now. The medical staff have fever. It could be because they're completely exhausted, but most likely, rationally speaking, it is because they have been infected. When you have 10 or 20 or 30,000 people crammed in a very dense space, and you don't have enough toilets, and you don't have enough water, running water, to wash your hands, and you can't clean your babies, and you can't clean the wounds, you will have spread of agents that will cause different types of symptoms. You will have, from your stomach and your intestinal system, you will have diarrhea and vomit caused by anything from Shigella to Salmonella to the other agents that cause GI infections. That's one big problem, and already we see that. You will have skin infections, which if you're an adult and you are, you know, healthy and well-fed, you can handle it. If you're wounded and you get a wound infection, it will quickly turn into septicemia and you risk dying. So you will have gastrointestinal infections, which spread like fire. So they will all have diarrhea. And diarrhea and dehydration will make the small ones and the sick and fragile ones quickly die if they cannot be rehydrated with IV fluids, which they don't have enough. Also, we fear the spread of hepatitis through contaminated water. And as we know, as I told you, they are drinking contaminated water now because there is not enough water supply. So all of these contagious diseases we have to expect will spread. And I'd like to make another note, because we always talk about the wounded and those who need wound treatment and surgery. But a population of 2.2 million people, they have common diseases. They get myocardial infarction, they get a brain stroke, they break their legs, they are going to deliver, they need cesarean sections, they will have pneumonia. All of these patients will also need medical treatment to avoid an unnecessary death. And there is no capacity for that now, let alone all the people with some sort of mental disease, psychiatric diagnoses, who are, of course, gravely aggravated in this situation of war. Where is the room to take care of all these common patients with chronic and the diabetic patients who cannot get their insulin and the renal failure? We know that they have 50 hemodialysis machines in Shifa without electricity. All of them will die.
And can you talk about why having water is not enough, that water needs electricity to keep it clean?
Well, if you are going to have... I'm drinking water here in Egypt. I wouldn't have drunk the water from the Nile. This water has been cleaned in a water in a drinking water plant in Egypt. They are easy to set up. It's an easy mechanism, but then you need water, which they have very little of, natural water, and dwells in Gaza, and you need electricity for the purification process. Then you can have bottles with water, which you can drink safely. If you only have brackish water, which is the main component of the spontaneous or the natural water in Gaza, if you drink brackish water, you have two problems. Number one, it's polluted, and number two, it has a too high content of saline. So you get sick from it. And 95% of the water in Gaza has been examined and doomed or given the quality that it is unfit for human consumption. So the water situation in Gaza has always been extremely precarious and difficult. Now, when the water producing plants in Gaza are shut down, there is no natural source. You can't run to the mountains and find a nice little waterfall with clean water. There is no clean water naturally in Gaza. Also because the sewage system has been broken by bombing, so the sewage will filter into the groundwater, which already is very brackish. So this is why water is so important in Gaza. And look, 2.2 million people, they actually produce a lot of garbage. It's around 32 degrees here now, and in Gaza, this garbage is piling up in the streets. Nobody can get it and get rid of it. In addition to that, the number of missing people in the ruins of the bombed houses is more than 2,000, among them 1,020 children. These corpses will start to rot. And those who have been in these situations, they know that the smell and just the feeling of rotten corpses is unbearable. So water is incredibly important. You cannot run a hospital without access to clean water. Number one, to drink, to be in a stable fluid balance. Number two, to clean the hospital, the floors, the walls, the operating room. Number three, to be able to boil and clean instruments. And number three, to be able to clean wounds and to just have your daily hygiene as a human being. With all these tens of thousands of families, they need to wash their kids. We need water to flush the toilets. In some of the shelters in southern Gaza, the UNRWA schools, there was, what was it? Two toilets for 14,000 people. Of course, this is going to be a major public health disaster in addition to the trauma disaster, in addition to the disaster for human values and for international order.
And Dr. Gilbert, you've talked about the two types of injuries, direct ones and then crush injuries, when people are in the rubble from the collapse of a building. Can you talk about how you deal with both? And in this time when the hospitals are under so much siege, how they deal with this?
You could sort of divide the war wounds into three main categories. The crush wounds from collapsed buildings, pretty much like the wounds and injuries you have during an earthquake, and people cannot escape the concrete buildings. Then you have the wounds from direct hits, from either bullets or shrapnels. And then you have the burns. The burns always constitute a large group of patients in all kind of warfare. And as I said, in Shifa now, there are more than 100 burns with more than 40% of burned surface. We need to get an airlift from Egypt out to the world's burn units to save these burned children. So the burns, extremely demanding. They need right temperature, right humidity, very much cleanliness, and they need daily debridement and shifting and then transplant in order to save the life of the burned patient. The shrapnels and the bullets, they will penetrate your body, and particularly the three cavities, the skull cavity, the chest cavity, and the abdominal cavity. When a bull runs through your body, it will deliver energy, and it will explode or open up organs and blood vessels. That will cause bleedings. Bleedings internal will kill you if it's not stopped. In the chest, you can easily stop the bleeding by putting in chest tubes, plastic tubes, between the ribs and drain out the blood. Pretty much all the bleedings can be controlled, easily done. You can do it in local anesthetics. For the abdominal cavity, you have to open up and you have to go in, find the bleeding, stop the bleeding by direct pressure, and then just close up, pack it, close it up, and reoperate in a day or two when the patient is stable to find the anatomical openings and suture that. For the shrapnel injuries, they can be very many. They can be like hundreds hitting a body, and you need to explore every inlet to find the trajectory of that shrapnel and to find if there is any bleeding. These are complicated, time-consuming, and you have to do what we call damage control surgery, which means only to find the bleeding, identify the bleeding, stop the bleeding, and then do the anatomical reconstruction a day or two later. For the crush injuries, which comes from, you know, falling down, brick, concrete, whatever, you know, wood there might be, it will cause fractures and crush injuries, for first and foremost. Also many head injuries. They will have the problem with many types of fractures that need stabilization. There is not enough external stabilizers in Gaza now. You know, you can, if you have an open fracture, you can drill in metal bars at certain points, and you can connect the metal bars, stabilize the fracture, and they can grow together. It's a simple, very, very elegant technical procedure, but they don't have the bars and the mechanism you need to do the external fixation. So in addition to the fractures, you will have the crush injuries, that you have been having a large load on your muscles and the muscles are crushed. The problem with the crush injuries in these circumstances is that you will have complications when all these tissue factors are released into the blood. You will clog your kidneys. So early stabilization and early flushing of the kidneys is very important with crush injuries. Fractures, crush, and then of course the head injuries, which may be closed or open and will need intensive care. Most of the complicated injuries in all these three groups, the blunt crush injuries, the shrapnel and the bullet injuries and the burns, will need intensive care treatment following surgery in order to survive. And currently there are 170 patients on ventilators in Shifa alone. If they lose electricity, they will lose their lives.
Top United Nations officials are expressing growing alarm over the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, as the enclave's last remaining hospitals are on the verge of shutting down due to a lack of fuel, as Israel intensifies its ground invasion while rejecting growing calls for a humanitarian ceasefire. In North Gaza, Israel attacked areas next to the Indonesian hospital Monday, where Dr. Moen El-Masri said the staff is struggling to treat patients.
The damage has been caused more than one area in this unit. The damage has directly led to the disconnection of the electricity line of this unit. As you know, this means no electricity for the patients and injured here, which directly threatens their lives and could lead to the death of many of these patients. In a few hours from now, the power will be cut due to the limited fuel available in the generators. Running out of fuel means power will be cut, meaning certain death for many of the patients in the ICU, some of whom need respirators, as well as patients in the surgical suites, and patients in other units who numbered around 240 or 250.
We go now to Gaza City, where we're joined by Dr. Hamam Alo, who works at El-Shifa Hospital, the largest hospital in Gaza. Dr. Alo, thanks so much for joining us. I know you've just left the hospital a few minutes ago. You told Jewish Currents yesterday, "I had to stop the resuscitation of a patient who went into cardiac arrest in the dialysis unit because if she made it back to life, we had no ventilator to offer her. We have to prioritize patients who are younger, healthier. We have lost the ability to provide true care." If you can talk about the situation right now at your hospital and overall.
Oh, hey, thank you for contacting me. This is not an incident I would really love to keep remembering, but this is what you just said was exactly what happened to me. As physicians, we are trained to resuscitate patients who go into cardiac arrest, hoping they would make it back again to life and consequently put them in ventilators to help them live again, go back to life. But I had to stop my co-nurses and my physicians from doing this. They asked me, why are you asking us to stop resuscitating the patient. It's like you're asking us to kill her. I told them we have no better options. No, we have no wiser choices, because in case she makes it back to life, we have no ventilators to offer her. And if there is any, we would prevent a younger, healthier, injured patient from entertaining that luxury. I mean the ventilator. So I don't know if you would imagine the amount of regret, the amount of sadness I'm living with since this happened with me. But I'm sorry to say there was no better options to go for except stopping that resuscitation. And if this tells us anything, this tells us how things are really getting worse and worse. I was talking to a journalist an hour ago or so, and he kept asking me, you told me a week earlier that things are bad, and are these now the same, because you're telling me things are very bad as well now. I told him, yeah, this was probably a very strange answer from my side, because things were really bad 1-2 weeks into war, but now they are getting really worse. We have patients admitted to emergency departments where they shouldn't be admitted, where there should be vacant beds for newcomers, for new patients. We have patients admitted to dialysis unit. You know, dialysis unit is a closed unit where you offer a service, and when you're done with your patients, you close your doors. But we can't do this anymore. We are allowing people to live in the unit, actually. We are admitting now patients who need care other than dialysis patients. The few trucks that were allowed in with aid to Gazan people actually is almost nothing compared to what we need. And there was many of the contents of these trucks that were allowed into Gaza had water, gloves, and gauze, and this is not what we are looking for. We are looking for devices, medications, things of really major help and concern for providing real health care for people in need. Number of injured patients is increasing. The number of people with chronic medical illnesses who need regular follow-up and regular maintenance of and the provision of medications is increasing. We are not capable of providing the care other than keeping people dying from death. This is the only thing we can do, and we can't properly provide this care because we are getting, we are running out of medications and supply.
Dr. Hamamolo, you've said every day I see a fear in their eyes that I can't do much about. It's very painful. If you have kids, you know how horrible it is not to be able to comfort them, to ensure they're all right, to make them hope for anything beyond living one more day. If you can talk about that in the hospital, which, as you said, is not just a hospital for sick people. Thousands are taking refuge at Al-Shifa and Al-Quds and the other hospitals. And also, we're talking to you as you just left Al-Shifa. How do you comfort your family? What's happening to your family as you're at the hospital?
I tell them at least we still have a house with a door to close. But many thousand refugees, people like us who used to live in dignity, have no longer houses and no doors to close to protect them. They are surrounded by wastewater, by garbage. They don't have adequate continuous supply of clean water to drink. Many of them have a lot of missing members of their families. They don't know if they are alive or not. I tell them at least we still have a house to live in, but they don't have. And surprisingly, my 4- and 5-year-old kids, they accept this as a comfort, as a better situation compared to those refugees living. They are living actually in hospitals, but it's not like they are living inside the hospital departments. Many of them do not have enough space to go into hospital hallways, so they are living around the buildings and in the garden. So yeah, surprisingly, my very young kids accept this.
The Israeli military has dropped thousands of pamphlets warning people where you are in northern Gaza to leave. Why don't you go with your family south?
And if I go, who treats my patients? They are not animals. They have the right to receive proper health care.
Doctor,
so we can't just leave.
The World Health Organization talked about this issue of telling doctors to leave their patients, choosing your own lives over your patients. Can you talk about that choice, since so many patients can't leave, for example, babies in incubators?
You think I went to medical school and for my postgraduate degrees for a total of 14 years, so I think only about my life and not my patients? I'm asking you, ma'am. You think this is the reason why I went to med school? To think only about my life? This is not the reason why I became a doctor.
Can you talk about what's happening to the hospitals? Just in our headlines today, we talked about, and in the last few days, the attack on the Indonesia hospital. The Turkish hospital is the only cancer hospital. Can you talk about the significance of these places, both as a sanctuary, thousands of people taking refuge, and for patients?
Indonesian hospital is providing health care for over 400,000 citizens in the Gaza Strip. And this part of the Gaza Strip is being split from the rest of the Gaza Strip. If this hospital stops providing care, so we are exposing many thousand Palestinian souls to the dangers of disease and death. Turkish hospital, with its very modest capabilities even before war, was the only hospital providing care and medications for cancer patients from around the Gaza Strip. It was airstruck yesterday. I don't know how many patients and healthcare professionals were wounded. And many patients are dying now because they are not safe with their families to go to receive care and to continue their chemotherapy. The Ministry of Health has declared 2 hours ago also that the electricity would be cut off from Ashifa Hospital, the largest hospital representing 40% of the healthcare power in the Gaza Strip, and providing services for many machine-dependent patients, like the ventilated patients and the hemodialysis patients. So if electricity is cut out from this in this hospital, so we are directly deciding those patients are going to necessarily die. Ventilated patients will die in minutes. Dialysis patients will die in hours to days from stopping their hemodialysis. Many patients are now being treated with the modest supplies we have. Many diabetic patients are now being admitted to the hospital because of their insulin is not being kept in the refrigerator, so it's not working. We are out. We ran out of many medications, like antifungal medications. We have a patient who died earlier this week with mucormycosis. This is an invasive, ugly type of fungal infection that killed her because we had no amphotericin to offer her. So my very simple answer to your question is that this thing is coming to so many people in the Gaza Strip in hours to days. If this continues the same way it's going on,
Dr. Allo, the Middle East Eye reports on a baby who died, says his death certificate has been issued before his birth certificate. A one-day-old baby has been killed by Israeli bombing in Gaza. Israel, the military, the government, says that Al-Shifa, your hospital, is Hamas, the site of Hamas command and control. Can you respond to that, Dr. Allo?
I've been working this hospital for over 2 years, and I never saw this. So I'm no lawyer, I'm no attorney, but this is how I'm simply replying. I never saw this for over 2 years. If this is true, I would see at least a clue.
I want to ask you about the shipments of aid coming in. Normally, in normal times, if there's ever a normal time in Gaza, over 400 trucks a day. We're talking about a trickle of trucks now, maybe a dozen, maybe eight in a day. Have you ever seen this aid arriving at the hospital? And can you talk about what you need right now?
Well, that number you just mentioned that was allowed into Gaza Strip is actually what you were referring to. It is nothing compared to what we need, nothing compared to the shortage in supplies, machines, and medications we are in need for. The only thing I came just as I was leaving the hospital today was cartoons of IV fluid bottles. This is the only thing I saw. And I don't really know if this came through the aid trucks in the few couple of days, or that was from the stores of the Ministry of Health. In addition, I happened to ask about in the hospital administration, and what they mentioned that was all about the gloves and gauze. And this is not what we are actually only in need for. This is what maybe the least we care for, the least we are in need for. So this is, again, nothing compared to what we are in need for in terms of supplies and medications.
Finally, Dr. Hammam Allo, your message at this point to the United States, where we're based, and to the world?
Actually, the message hasn't changed since the beginning of this war. First, we need this war to end because we are real humans. We are no animals. We have the right to live freely. Second, if you want your citizens to live under these circumstances, what would you do for them? This is what we exactly would like you to do for us as a superpower country, as the United States, because you are really as human as your U.S. citizens are. We were expecting more earlier, solutions for that humanitarian and healthcare catastrophes and the crises. But what we are seeing mainly through trucks allowed into Gaza is nothing compared to us. So we are being exterminated. We are being massively eradicated. And you pretend to care for humanitarian and human rights, which is not what we are living now. To prove us wrong, please do something. Thank you.
Dr. Hammam Allo, speaking to us from Gaza City, where he works at the largest hospital, Al-Shifa Hospital. Please be safe.
I hope I will be. Let's hope both together I will be. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for us for today. You were listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. Tune in on Thursday at 11 a.m. for more news related to Palestine. Until next time, I wish you a free, free Palestine.
Looking to spice up your life and bring more flavor to your food? Try Mr. Boom, famous jerk dressing and pepper sauce. It's that good.
Al-Hara.
Good evening and welcome to Amanda, 1 hour of African current affairs brought to you here on CKUT 90.3 FM for 36 plus years. And I say that for a reason. There are a bunch of people in the studio right now. We have Roberto with his two adorable mini little children, Milan and Elio. Sama, Clara Swan, Fabrice, Malude,
Doug Miller,
Gwen Shulman. Few of us have been doing this all 36 years, or maybe one of us, but a lot of us have been doing this for a long
27
time.
27 years, that's not bad.
And 27 years. And so we're throwing around these numbers, and we have a jam-packed studio and people calling in because, dear listeners, who we love so much, this is going to be our last show. And try not to cry about it. It's time. It's time to pass the mantle on to somebody else. But it's been an amazing, amazing ride. Right, Doug?
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. I don't even know where to start. But you know what? Tonight, folks, I think what's been on our mind, all of us, has been what's going on in Israel and Palestine.
Yeah. So, and we're dedicated.